Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, going with a, will we call that a dark green, a forest green V-neck, Cameron?
I think your white balance is wrong. That's gray, man.
I think my white balance is off, right? Anyway.
Production term, like, sorry. Yeah,
I was going to say, like, three people in the audience know what white balance is. But hey, here we are. This is my producer extraordinaire and technical aficionado, Cameron McCoy. We're not going to turn this podcast into a video-centric podcast, Cameron, okay?
No, please. Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants to talk about white balance. What we do want to talk about is Magic the Gathering. Hey, we've got a ton of topics to cover today. And I'm going to start with you, Cameron, because you played a little Legacy, a little Modern. I'm going to talk Modern, and then finally, I could talk about Arena and my experiences in the Arena.
I can't wait.
So, anyway, why don't you lead us off, Cameron?
Yeah, so I'll first talk about Esper Control in Modern, and I've been having, I would say, some fairly moderate success with Esper Control. I do think that, like, your Jeskai version is probably better, but for me, there's nothing better than casting Esper Charms and Thought Seizes and lots of hand disruption, right? And that's really the mode that I am going after. Mm-hmm. So those are your early turns, and then late turns you have Cryptic Commands for counter magic backup, and then your Jace as a finisher. So I've run this through one and a half leagues. I'm almost through my second league on this, and first time I went 3-2. Where the deck really, really struggles is against Tron. I feel like I don't have a lot of interaction as far as, like, early counter magic. Hand disruption is okay, but you really want land destruction, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, my mana base is a little too greedy to add any
Field
type
of Ruin.
Yeah. Field of Ruin or Ghost Quarters or anything like that. But anyway, 3-2, burn, still have a real hard time with that. You do not want to be casting Thought Seizes against, you know, their Goblin Guides or whatever, so you really have to decide whether or not you want to shock yourself for two or, you know, all that sort of thing. But, I mean, against a wide variety of the field, I feel like it does really, really well. Anything with, like, really heavy creature base, humans, that sort of thing, I feel like that's where my deck really, really starts to go well. So anyway, went 3-2 the first one, and right now I'm sitting at 2-1 in my second league of that. And I like it. I'll put the deck list up as far as, like, what I'm running, because I have, like, Lingering Souls and a Batterskull in it. It's essentially Stoneblade without the Stoneforge Mystic
right?
Yeah. But I feel like the way that Modern Control kind of works, getting to that 5 mana base is not hard. So you're just kind of, like, delaying your Batterskull activation maybe by, like, 2 turns, but it's still, and you don't have a way to tutor it, but it's just, like, one of the ways to deal with a lot of good Modern cards, which just don't have a easy time dealing with that unless they want to start suiting up a Braid or a Culligan's Command, and just being able to bounce it back to my hand is really hilarious and awesome. The other thing I've played is the Miracles list. So in Legacy, I tried the Blue-White Control, right? I mean, you're running, like, 3 Terminuses.
Yeah, like, calling it Miracles is kind of a disservice at this stage.
It really is. I mean, like, yes, it's playing, like, a lot of the cards from Miracles, but it is not Miracles. So where to begin with this?
I'm really interested in this deck. Like, I am very on the fence about just straight buying this deck. So.
This is a very Curtis deck, I would say. Like, I really feel like you would have a good time playing this deck. So there's a couple things that, like, I would say make the deck interesting, and I need to have more familiarity with it because it is kind of a difficult deck to pilot. Using predict important in the correct way is very, very important. And if you don't use it in the right way, you can totally hose yourself more so than, like, your opponent hosing you, right? So there's things like that. Search for Ascanta, like, I need to go back and listen to our original show where we talked about that card. I think we both were very favorable with it in Modern, I don't know how much I thought it was actually going to be an essential part of the deck or of decks in Legacy. But if they don't Abrupt Decay your search, that card can win you the game on its own. It is such a good card. Like, I can't get over, like, how much more card advantage you can get with that card alone. It is super good. Like, it's just being able to dig and then find, oh, there's my Council's Judgment to deal with their, you know, Merit Liege token, and I'm able to then win without having to pay 20 or give them 20 life or something like that with the swords is just like huge. So yeah, man, this deck is good. I have a hard time playing it. I went 2-3, so not the best Legacy League I've ever gone through, but for my unfamiliarity with the deck and especially with like just the quality of player on MTGO, I felt like I did fairly well. I was pretty happy with my results.
Yeah, that deck really interests me a lot. Mm-hmm. Were you running the version that plays Back to Basics as well?
Yes, it has two Back to Basics in the main, Monastery Mentor and Jace. Like, those are like your ways to really deal with it. Oh, and Back to Basics, man. It's so stupid and so good. It's awesome.
I was going to say, some of the, especially the greedy four-color Leovold deck, seems like it can shut them down in a hurry.
Really shine that way, yeah, for sure.
And it can actually makes a matchup, like, weirdly can affect combo elves very strongly if you play it early enough. You know, there's some really corner casey things. Now, before we leave Legacy, I do want to mention, and the listener escapes me, but I got a really great email asking me about my perspective on Maverick. The truth is, I haven't played Maverick in like 6 months, so I haven't really been developing the deck, so I don't feel really qualified to talk about the very nuanced specifics of where I would play the deck. You know, hey, start with four Deathrite Shamans and go from there.
Yeah.
The version I want to test would have Leovold in it, and just kind of see how that goes. But again, yeah, I haven't put any work in, and I think the next Legacy event we go to, I might want to borrow your Tundras and see if I can play said Back to Basics deck. Mm-hmm. Just give that a shot, right? I mean, and Cameron, you're so generous. For the small fee of 75% of my winnings, you'd probably let that happen.
Oh, easy.
Right?
Yeah.
So, joke's on you, because 75% of zero is still zero. So, Cameron, I want to talk about Modern before I get into Arena. I played a lot of Storm this week. Tried the fetchless version of Storm. Mm-hmm. And here's what I'll say. So, first of all, on Magic Online, I ran pretty well. I went 4-1 in back-to-back leagues. Now these are friendly leagues. I know people always, they're not competitive, but whatever. When you're a 3-2 guy and you live in 3-2 world, a friendly league is where you want to be.
Yeah.
And I'm more than comfortable with that. So anyway, played it. My first league, I actually miscounted mana on my Storm to win my fifth match. So I should have gone 5-0 if I would have actually operated the deck properly. I want to say this, like, the deck is good. It has very, very strong matchups. I think that Grixis Death Shadow being a less of a presence in the metagame means that Storm has gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I would never say that I piloted this version effectively. Now, just to give you an idea, it's weird. It's straight blue-red. There's no more white. There's no fetch lands. The idea being that, and we covered this last week, that the scries are more effective if you're not playing fetch lands. The mana base is also slightly less painful, though you are playing Chivin Reefs, right?
Sure.
And in my experience, I've run well with it. I'm not convinced all the way that playing fetch lands is incorrect. Now, a lot of people will cite this whole thing of, okay, there's been mathematical studies that show if you thin your deck, it's not worth the life loss. If you're using fetch lands purely to thin, that's bad. Obviously, I think a mathematical model doesn't work very well for this argument once you're playing a two-color deck. Mm-hmm. Because if you look, if you read the study, it's basically a monocolor deck that he's talking about. And putting in certain number of fetch lands to thin your deck, right? Now, whenever you're playing, and the model I think was either 20 or 22 lands, Storm plays 17. Mm-hmm. Now, based upon just like the little calculations I was doing, your draws are roughly 4% better in terms of not hitting a land once you've fetched once or twice in a game, which is probably average. That being said, how does that interact with your scries? How about when they pass something? How about when you cast an early gifts? Like, there's just too many variables to know. But what I will say is I did enjoy the fact that the fetchless version doesn't ding me as much. Anyway, so then I played Paper last night. And of course, because I ran white hot on Magic Online, I like totally just played like, A, played poorly, but B, did not run well and went 2-2 on Saturday night Modern. I didn't play necessarily the best matchups. I keep getting paired against Ad Nauseam, which I should be a lot faster than. Mm-hmm. And I keep having earth-shatteringly slow draws, which stinks. The one big change that I'm not a big fan of. So first of all, the deck plays Repeal and Unsubstantiate. I'm not exactly in love with Unsubstantiate in the deck. I love Repeal in it. Noxious Revival's been an all-star. It also plays one Search for Escanta, and I've found that to be actively not good. Just having one in the deck is super weird. And when you're storming, like a lot of times hitting that just feels like a dead stop.
Yeah, it would be a dead draw for sure, right? Yeah.
And so it's great on turn two in that deck, like unbelievable. But the rest of the time, it's not been outrageous, you know?
Sure.
So, Cameron, I also played a lot of Arena this week. I have a lot to say. So, have you signed up for Arena at all?
Yes, I need to download it and do all of that. Because I'm a, you know, awesome Magic the Gathering podcast host, I have not done a single thing with Arena.
But you do have an invite.
Yes, I have the invite. I can get in and all that. I just haven't done it. So.
All right. Well, I'm just going to let this moment of silence be my silent judgment. So here
we go. Yeah, please.
Okay. So, first of all, I want to address some of the criticism because I've heard some, I would say, outrageous things. So at the beginning of the show, just kind of going forward for those of you regular listeners, we will do a brief Arena kind of moment. We'll talk about where it's at right now. It's still in beta. Mm-hmm. They've increased the number of sets. So now it's Ixalan block, and they went back and added Amonkhet block. Mm-hmm. So now you have what feels like a little bit bigger than a block constructed format. But you cannot pay into it. The only way you can open packs is to grind for gold, but you can't just like, the store's not active.
Yeah.
And so I just want to say this because I've seen a ton of people mention the economy on Twitter and stuff. Just beware if you're not in Arena, any complaining about the economy because it's not there. There's no way to buy packs, right? So any complaining about that is just completely ludicrous and unbelievably ill-informed. I feel like it's been borderline irresponsible, some of the stuff that I've seen thrown around, when you just straight up don't know. And Magic players should be smarter than that, right? I mean, this is coming from somebody who shoots from the hip on his podcast all the time, right?
Yep.
But look, just like judging the product based upon the economy that isn't in the system yet is dumb and just incorrect. The other thing I would point out is there's been a lot of things where I think there's a little bit of wishful thinking of, oh, this is duels again, or Magic Online is going to stick around forever. I mentioned this when I talked to Spencer Howland on Twitter. I have yet to hear a single compelling business reason why Arena won't fully replace Magic Online. Now, don't overdo this. I'm not saying it's going to happen in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But in 2 years, the idea that we are going to have a product that runs full limited and full standard and maybe full something else,
yeah,
and they're going to run Magic Online parallel to it, give me the business case for that. They hired a CEO that has a digital background, and here is what I almost guarantee you happen. They came in and they said, here's our digital product. We allow third parties on said digital product to buy and sell our product, and they get to take a percentage. Also, we have like 5,000 concurrent players in our constructed leagues, where Hearthstone has probably tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. So what's step one, right?
Yeah.
They invested a ton into this digital product, and guys, it's going to replace Magic Online. They're going to keep Magic Online around as long as people are willing to pay for it, but boy, what happens when Windows 11 comes out? What happens when, you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When Arena surpasses the player population on Magic Online, which is probably going to happen pretty quickly once Limited is unlocked on Arena. You know, I just, stop living in Candyland, guys. Like, I'm glad you enjoy Magic Online, and I'm continuing to play on Magic Online, even though I don't necessarily like it. But dude, this is you're living on borrowed time. Cameron, did you have anything to add to that? I know you're a Magic Online player as well.
No. Everything that you just said about a business model was absolutely correct. I mean, unless there's just a complete and utter zero player base in Arena, there's no way that they're going to continue to support two competing properties of their own design moving forward for like 5 years. There's no way. Like, that's just a really bad business model. And so, yeah, they're moving this way. They're just doing it, I think, in a very smart way as far as like stair steps, right? So totally agree.
It's basically like a high school relationship, right? And they're not telling you that they're going to dump you when they move on to college. But guys, that's what's going to happen. They're giving you the we'll see. We'll see how things are looking. Uh-huh. See how I feel, right?
This is weirdly, yes, you're totally right.
But they're stringing you along, man. So, like, enjoy Magic Online, but know that you're living on borrowed time. Think about the business case of, okay, so our current Magic Online product, first of all, the graphics, like the card image is like 125 by 90 or whatever in pixels. It only runs on Microsoft's .NET framework, which I don't think has been updated in a year. And it doesn't play on tablets. It doesn't play on Macs. It doesn't play on game consoles. And we don't even offer the subscription model a third party has to. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on. Now, in terms of playing it, I've enjoyed it. Now, there is a little bit laggy and glitchy because they've added so many players to it. Hey, I opened some wild cards and I straight went to blue-black control, which I think everybody is recognizing is the best deck on Arena because there's this card, Cameron. I don't know if you've heard of it, called the Scarab God.
Yeah, I've heard it does some stuff.
Yeah, it's a pretty messed up card. So I just have two of those and a large number of counter spells and card drawing spells. And that's right. I mean, I'm on a heater on Arena. Now, they do quests just like Hearthstone does where they're like, hey, we'll give you 200 gold if you win 3 matches with a green-red deck, right? All that stuff's for chumps, man. I'm just going to play the best deck and we're just going to play it as much as possible.
There you go.
And so I've had, and my gaming or my desktop PC is not like this massive gaming, 4K machine, and it runs Arena pretty well. So Cameron, get on that, man. Get on that.
Yeah. We'll download it today.
He says that. He's not. He's going to go to Banana Republic. Get himself an Orange Julius, whatever it is that you do on a Sunday after. You brunch first, right, Cameron?
We have to brunch, man. Yeah.
Hashtag brunching. All right, Cameron. So we're going to come back. We're going to talk some more Dominaria spoilers and some other stuff going on in the community. We'll be right back. We'd like to thank a few of our patrons for supporting the show. Peter Seifert, Issa B., and Eric Ian Heaviside. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click on the donate button. All right, Cameron. So let me check your temperature on Dominaria thus far. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of this set, more than we were supposed to have at this point. Mechanics and everything. How are you feeling? Because I know you don't have any draw to Dominaria.
Yeah, I mean, I have like no affinity to it. But, I mean, this feels like a really solid limited product right now. Like, with the entire legendary thing and some of the new card mechanics, I like it a lot. I think this is going to be fun the way that Amonkhet was really, really fun to play and draft. So in that sense, I'm really looking forward to it. And it seems like it's going to just – it will be a really good set once you get rid of all the energy cards, all the quirky artifact and crew cards, and we just have – like this more focused set. I'm really looking forward to that standard. We'll just say that.
Yeah, I mean, we still have like 7 months till Kaladesh goes bye-bye.
I know, yeah.
And the real bummer is Amonkhet's going with it.
That is a bummer, right?
But I guess that means Scarab God goes away. Poor Locust God, man. Never had his time.
Yeah, right.
Could have been somebody. Anyway, Cameron, why don't you start us off with some of these Dominaria spoilers? We're just, again, slowly slicing it up. Why don't you start us off with Steel Leaf Champion?
Yeah, Steel Leaf Champion cost 3 green. It's an elf knight with a power and toughness of 5/4. Steel Leaf Champion can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. Man, I like this card a lot. I mean, on its face, 3 green for 5/4 is hugely powerful. I think if you're running some sort of like green-red monsters deck, getting to 3 green, especially with some of the dual lands we have, is not going to be that hard, and you're swinging with this big, dumb creature, 5/4. So there's not a lot to not like about this card, I would say.
Oh, how the power has been pushed.
Right?
Now, it should be said that we've had green, big guys before that have not seen a ton of play. I think there was one in World Wake, Leatherback Baloth or something like that.
Okay.
Now, this guy can't be chumped by a little guy, which does matter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an elf synergy here. So it is worth pointing out. This can be collected companied into play.
Ooh.
So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that this sees play in modern mm-hmm. elves. I don't think it'll fit in legacy elves. But you're right, especially with Llanowar elves coming back. Being able to turn to this, and then not only are you turn toing it, their 2-drop might not be able to block it.
Yeah.
And so it's a thing. I think this is a nice little bit of beef and the kind of thing that green's in the market for. You know, you definitely have a lot of dual lands. The question is going to be the things that surround this, because if control is a strong thing, cards like this tend to be pretty bad. Because you're spending your turn 3 playing this guy, and they're spending their turn 4 wrathing. It's a bad time, right?
For sure.
But yeah, very beefy, very good. Now let's talk about Wrath, Cameron.
Mm.
This one I have a little bit of trouble with. I think it's really good.
Yeah.
But because of this whole legendary sorcery thing, it might actually be just pure garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know how to evaluate that. So Urza's Ruinous Blast is 4 and a white. Like a seriously good bath. Like you can't underrate that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can only cast this if you control a legendary creature or a planeswalker. Exile all non-land permanents that aren't legendary. Okay? So it's a big, bad board wipe. You can only cast it if you have a planeswalker or a legendary creature in play, though. But that being said, if you have a big, bad legendary creature in play, it gets to live through this experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a one-sided, not just Wrath, board wipe.
Yeah, yeah.
So when this is going to work, it's going to work real good.
Yeah. And let's be honest, in control, you will probably have a big, bad, legendary, Scarab God-like creature, right, that is going to be on the board and, sure, wipe the board for 5, and you got yourself a 5/4 or whatever you have that, you know, your opponent's going to have a really hard time dealing with. So this is a great card. I like it. In the right context, I like it, I should say.
So you might play some number of Fumigates, and then like one of these,
mm-hmm.
something like that. Like this, the way that this is going to constrain your deck building is going to be super weird. And I don't know what to think about that, but it's a thing, right? Okay, what do we got next, Cameron?
We got Cast Down, which is an instant that costs 1 and a black and destroy target non-legendary creature. It's a Doomblade, right? I mean, like this sort of thing is a really, really good card. I mean, like in the sense of like it will be tough to cast probably not tough to cast, but it will be very limited if like legendary creatures are a real big thing coming up in this next set, which obviously they're going to be. But I'm just thinking of this like in the terms of something like blue-black fairies when you were running like the Doomblade that killed non-artifact creatures.
Go for the throat,
right? Like this seems to have actually like even more game in that type of deck because when you're playing against something like Affinity, that's like the worst card to have in your deck. This seems to have like a little bit more game, I would say. So like in Modern and that sort of context, it's great. In Standard, any sort of just like removal that's got just a few conditions associated with it, great. Like I think this is a great card.
Agreed. I think Fatal Push might constrain this slightly. Like you might see four Fatal Pushes and two of this guy.
Sure.
But you could, I mean, this could be good enough where it is four Fatal Pushes and four of this guy and four Scarab Gods, and then who cares what's in the rest of your deck?
Exactly.
Right? Like, it could be that oppressive. And so, this card is really good. Obviously, post Dominaria Standard, there's going to be a lot of Legends running around, et cetera, et cetera. But just being able to cast this on turn two, like a turn two removal spell that's this good is really valuable. There's also Moment of Craving, which is not nothing in Standard. But the go for the throat spot that occasionally floats around in Control List and Modern, I think this will replace it because the only legendary creature I can think of that you regularly need to kill is Thalia.
Sure.
Like everything else, like obviously Geist of St. Trapped is a legend, but you can't hit him anyway.
Yeah, it's hexproof, yeah.
And then
Tassigur. I mean, like, you know, sometimes, right? But yeah.
I
mean, occasionally there's a task in a lot of these. Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like non-artifact seems like it matters more because whenever you're holding Go for the Throat against Affinity, it's nightmarish.
Yeah.
Nightmarish. All right. Cameron, here it's time for our token card that you want to play in Tezzeret in Modern Control.
Yeah, right.
So here is Zahid, Djinn of the Lamp. He is 4 blue-blue for a legendary creature, Djinn. And basically, you can pay 3 and a blue and tap an untapped artifact you control rather than play its mana cost. And it's a 5/6 flyer. Okay, so a throwback to the Djinn from Beta, or no, from Arabian Nights that was then in 3rd edition or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think this card is meh. It's Mahatmi Djinn, I think is the one I'm looking for.
Yeah.
That was a 6-mana 5/6 flyer. So overpowered in those days. So, Cameron, what's your thoughts, man?
I mean, you have to have the right type of cards to be doing with this. When we're talking, there are a lot of artifacts still floating around. And so I feel like, sure, being able to play this on turn 4... And then if we're using that white wrath to like wrath the board, and then all of a sudden you have a 5/6 flyer, clear of the way to, you know, attack, it seems pretty good. So maybe this is like the control finisher that you're looking for. But man, it's very, very specific as far as like how to get there. Not to say that there's not going to be some good icy manipulator type cards that you might use with this, right? So seems pretty good.
You can use the Mox,
right? Yeah.
Which, by the way, we were recording. I was very tired last week. I kept saying you could tap it for a Thalia with the Mox.
Yeah.
I re-listened to it. I was like, oh, Curtis, that's not how it works. And I expected a lot of corrections. But our audience, who obviously would know how it works, decided to give me a break last week. So I appreciate that. All right, Cameron, I'll let you cover the Merfolk.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. We have the Merfolk Trickster. Cost 1 blue-blue. It is a Merfolk Wizard with power and toughness of 2/2 with flash. When Merfolk Trickster enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls, it loses all abilities until end of turn. Ugh. I mean, this is going in Merfolk, I think. Like, in Modern Merfolk, in Legacy Merfolk. Flash is great. Aether Vialing this, it just fits right on curve with so much of what Merfolk is doing. And the ability to just tap a creature, Like, just it needs like that one additional control mode. This seems great. It's a good card. And I don't know. Like, I don't feel like it'll have a place really in Standard. I don't feel like Merfolk really took off the way that it was supposed to. But, I mean, this might be the card that kind of makes it better. I just don't feel like it's quite there.
Yeah, what's interesting about this particular card is when you flash it in, it gives Merfolk a very strange defense against some of the modern combo creature combos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you live a turn.
Yeah.
Right? But if they're kiki-jikiing off, like, you can flash this guy in and shut down the combo for a turn and then theoretically swing. So there's some really bizarre kind of utility associated with this card.
For sure.
It'll go in Merfolk and Modern. Legacy, I mean, Legacy Merfolk isn't really even a thing. You know?
Sure.
But, hey, if you're that guy and you really enjoy... I guess if you're a Modern Merfolk player, you can just play Legacy Merfolk. You just buy some Wastelands and call it good, right?
Force of Wills, I think, yeah.
Do they play Forces?
You need Forces. Like, if you're playing... Okay. Yeah.
I don't even know, man.
Sure.
All right, Cameron, so Jace's Spellbook got spoiled. This is coming out in June. I believe it's $20, and you get non-foil copies of all these cards, and then one of them you get as a foil additionally. What's your reaction to this product, man?
This is great. I mean, as far as like a Legacy player who plays blue, there's a ton of these cards that just are great to have. Blue Elemental Blast, Negate, Counterspell, and Brainstorm. Just those four cards alone... Sure, why not trick out my deck a little bit more and put these in there? And they're great looking, you know, and I mean, even like Jace Bellerin, like it could have a place in Modern, right? I mean, like that card isn't nothing. So, I think this is a great product. I really do. I really want to spend like $100 and just have a four of like all of these cards. I probably won't do that, but... You know, I will maybe be able to get like a four of the Brainstorm or Counterspell for a fairly decent price. And they're great looking. I like it.
Yeah. And by the way, this frame is being used for the Friday Night Magic Opt promo as well.
Nice.
Which I will be picking up. Yeah, Blue Elemental Blast is also a great grab because that is really important in Pauper. I'm right there with you. I love this product. By the way, I have seen some people misattribute Mystical Tutor as being a Legacy card. Guys, that's banned in Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have preferred this one not to be in it. I bet, you know, that's the concession to Cube and EDH players.
Sure.
Maybe Mystical Tutor probably should be banned in EDH, but it's definitely banned in Legacy. But man, what a cool Brainstorm. I love this frame. I wish this was the frame all the time.
Yeah.
It looks very modern, very nice. So I will be getting at least four of those gifts on Given.
For sure,
man. Got to play that in Storm. So last thing I want to mention in terms of card stuff. So there's a bunch of other little itty-bitty tidbits of news. Supposedly in the Arena programming information notes, someone went through the files and found that there was a reference to a format that starts at Shadows of Innistrad on as their non-rotating format, which is interesting. That would still include Kaladesh, which...
No.
And then... The other thing is there's going to be a new version of EDH that is Standard-only cards called Brawl that will likely also end up on Arena. That is the most we'll talk about EDH probably over the next 6 months. So last thing I want to mention is this really complicated card game that Valve is publishing called Artifact. So in case you don't know, Valve is a giant in the video game business. They own Steam, and so... While they do generate revenue from games, they own Dota 2 and make Dota 2, which is, you know, regularly in the top three most streamed games at any given moment in Twitch. Most of their revenue comes from percentages on Steam, which is the app store for PC gaming. They've come out and said, hey, we're making a new game with Richard Garfield, who created Magic, called Artifact. And what's also interesting about this is unlike Hearthstone or Eternal or all this, there's no free-to-play model in it at all. It's like Magic Online. You physically buy packs. The cards you can, as the user, resell on the Steam marketplace. So it is essentially Magic Online's economy. Cameron, I want your perspective on this.
Yeah.
Because this had my eyebrows pretty raised when I was reading this article. First of all, do you think it's obviously it'll be a competitor to Magic Online, but do you think it'll be a competitor to Hearthstone?
Well,
and do you think pursuing this model is good?
So if there's one thing that I've learned is that you never doubt Blizzard and you never doubt Valve, because those two computer software gaming entities are not to be reckoned with. They are the biggest and the baddest, and if they're putting resources into something, they see a value in that, and they're a lot smarter than you or I or a lot of other people. They've got a business model that's going to work. So while I do scratch my head as far as, like, we've been talking for how many years just about, like, well, Magic's online's economy needs to change. It's so weird and, like, you know, like, why are we putting value on these cards that aren't valued the same way in paper and all this stuff? And all of a sudden Valve comes in and is like, hey, guess what we're going to do? Magic Online's economy. And to an extent, right? That just seems crazy in 2018 with, like, the free-to-play era. I question it, but it could lead to something. It could lead to maybe, I don't know, a new business model for Magic. I would say that no matter what, this does seem to just be bad for Magic, because it's just one additional competitor for Magic to have to deal with. I mean, I could go on and on about a whole different slew of things happening with this, but I would just say don't discount Valve just because they made Dota, they made Counter-Strike, and I mean, like, there is a ravenous fan base and player base behind those games, the way that there are behind Blizzard games. So this seems interesting, very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how this all develops.
Yeah, I'm there with you. So first of all, I think it is very feasible that this could end up surpassing Hearthstone. Like, I know on its face it seems crazy to compete with a free-to-play model, but first of all, the Steam marketplace, the big difference between that and the Magic Online marketplace is the Steam marketplace, you can sell multiple things from multiple, you know what I mean? It's kind of this microtransaction marketplace for multiple, you know, for Team Fortress 2, for Counter-Strike, for all these things. So, for PUBG. So there's all these different components to it, which I think will lead people to, I think, be a little bit results-oriented and not see those outside elements and go, well, if Magic Online never would have left that, they would be just as successful as Artifact. But they don't see that, you know, hey, I can sell a Counter-Strike weapon to get cards. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more of an open market than something like Magic Online. The other thing I would say is, just by virtue of Valve publishing this, the amount of free press they're going to get is going to be outrageous. The place where this could stumble is Richard Garfield in this interview said openly, I'm looking to make a more complicated game. He doesn't directly reference Hearthstone, but he says in the pursuit of the free-to-play model, card games have gotten too simple. And that we should be using all the PC elements or computer elements, I should say, to track a more complex game state. So there are lanes, there are like multiple boards in this game. And so it is inherently like more complex. I read one of the cards and it reads a lot more like an old Magic card than it does like a Hearthstone card.
Okay.
Like, I don't even play Hearthstone and I can like throw on a Hearthstone stream and basically have an awareness of what's going on. And that's been a real strength for them. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, this is it. This is not just news for Magic the Gathering and Arena and their digital plans, but a very real concern for Hearthstone as well, because a competitor's arriving with as much money and as much backing, and yeah, Richard Garfield's helping design the game. So we're going to keep our eyes on this. I'm going to try and sign up for the beta just to see what's going on with it. This is kind of offhand. I think the game looks ugly.
Okay.
I don't think it looks very attractive at all, but look, Counter-Strike isn't exactly a looker, and it's doing just fine. All right, Cameron, let's get out of all this card talk. Come back and talk about what else we've been doing this week. So, Cameron, you don't have a lot to share this week. You've been spending your evenings upping your photo editing and video editing game, eh?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's like kind of a hobby slash my real job is just like learning new things with like Photoshop, After Effects, Premiere, all these like, you know, video editing sort of things, multimedia things. So I haven't been spending a lot of time on the video game front. I will say that I've made a couple more hours progress into Prey. And if you haven't played that game, and if you like just like creepy vibes, great 80s synth music and sci-fi, oh my gosh, it's so good. It is like, you're totally right. It's moving in on like this crazy year of 2017 as like definitely in my top five as far as like just a really solid video game. Really dig it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how good last year was, and I think a lot of people are like, already 2018 is no, it's not as good.
We were talking about Neo at this time last year.
Yeah, Neo, and then Horizon was either out or about to come out, and Zelda, the Switch was about to come out. So, I want to talk about video games just really quickly, Cameron, because like I said, I had a week off.
Mm-hmm.
I've been continuing to just play Burnout Paradise every once in a while. It's a great game to play when my son is watching Elmo and we're just kind of chilling out together. Because, you know, hey, it's just a car driving around and that's fun. And it's fun to play against friends' times and all this stuff. But here's what I did. So Sea of Thieves came out this week, and it is a MMO, like maybe a closer comparison would be Destiny, but more casual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the idea is that there's no leveling. Everybody, like as soon as you start the game, you're going to do everything that you possibly can do the entire game. The only thing that you gain are cosmetic items. Okay.
Okay.
And your first few minutes with this game, you're like, this game is unbelievable. This is so much fun. This is crazy. Like, you start on this island. The game is beautiful, like this cartoony, almost Pixar-esque vibe. Mm-hmm. You get a treasure map, and then you set sail. You have to actually look at the map, and then you can get paired with other people, randoms, or you can play with a group of friends. And just like Destiny, it gets better the more people are with you. I got paired with this guy, and we went treasure hunting together, and we fought skeletons, and you know, we had to work together to sail the ship. He had to point the sails, and we had to drop the anchor. We actually dropped the anchor and turned it and did like a drift turn, and you can get into battles with other players and steal their gold, and there's so much fun to be had in the first 3 hours. And then you're like, wait a minute. Everything is the exact same, and because there's no leveling, there's nothing to chase, Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more like a really casual play with your friends kind of environment.
Yeah.
Where you can kind of just goof off and do silly things. Like you can actually drink so much grog that you can throw up into a bucket and throw it onto another person. Like the game's logic is really strong.
Uh-huh.
I heard a story of these, you know, it's like teams of four. So one ship got attacked by another ship. You can put yourself into a cannon and shoot yourself onto the other ship's deck.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
And so this guy got shot onto this other group's deck, put their ship's anchor down, so they were trapped, and then they blew them out of the water. So that's, fun that's things cool. like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's just nothing past that. So like the rest of the game hasn't been developed. But what I did was I didn't buy it. It's the first thing that Microsoft is doing where they're saying, hey, all of our exclusives are on our $10 a month thing. So if you spend $10, you're on Game Pass. You can play our newest exclusives. So I spent my $10. I played Sea of Thieves for like 2 days. I was like, okay, this is not for me. Cool. I only dropped $10. But here's the problem, Cameron. The other game that I hadn't finished and I wanted to get back to because the sequel is coming out this year is Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
have you played this one? This is Tomb Raider 2 of the newest ones.
Okay, no, I've only played the first one, which I really liked, you know, however long ago that was.
One day you should go back to this one because I'd forgotten how good it was, and I'd never finished it. I got like about halfway through it on Xbox and reloaded up my old save, and man, it's just a really good, solid action-adventure. You know, mm-hmm. it kind of does away with the really combat-intensive stuff in the first game, which I thought was a real weakness, and makes it much more about exploring hub worlds. But really an underrated game. It came out like right around the same time as Fallout 4. So it kind of got overwhelmed by that.
Yeah.
But if you want to be with all the cool kids and play the new Tomb Raider when it comes out in the fall, You need to check this one out. If you have Game Pass on the games on Microsoft Windows or the Xbox, you can just download it. And I think it's like $20 used on PS4. So it's also, by the way, got full-on 4K integration with Xbox and PlayStation. So if you are looking for a showcase game, this is where you want to be.
Nice.
So anyway, Cameron, I did see Black Panther, but we're going to talk about that later.
Oh, good.
So this show is running long.
Yeah.
But Cameron, if someone would like to get in touch with you and talk about your gray / green, we can have a huge debate. Is it gray? Is it green? V-neck? Where could they find you?
That's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I'm @Curtis Now. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We will check you guys next week.